The KM Football Podcast. Exclusive interviews with the biggest names in Kent football.
Welcome to this week's KM Football Podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Panting, and as always, I'm joined in the studio by Steve Turvett of the KM Sports Desk. Our guest this week has played more than 750 matches in his career and is back in the Garden of England, having started out in the county at Sittingbourne. After moving to Gravesend and Northleigh, as it was then known, he's featured for Lewes, Stevenage and Luton before joining Championship side Ipswich Town. Crawley and Luton again were also destinations before Eastleigh, and now he's back at Stonebridge Road playing for Ebbsfleet. It's a very warm welcome to Andy Drury, the Ebbsfleet midfielder. Good to see you, Andy.
Thank you. Good to see you both.
Thanks for coming in. Obviously, we do book our guests a few weeks in advance, but maybe it's quite a good timing on our part that you've come in after the events of Saturday. 4-2 win over Wrexham. Brilliant stuff on the field, but everyone afterwards was talking about events off the field. What's your recollections of the weekend now?
Yeah, it was quite strange. It was something that obviously the players didn't want to do at all. We just want to play football, and we're on a good run at the moment, and we've got the playoffs in sight. And you know, like any job, you want to get paid, and we haven't been paid, and we had to take a stance. And unfortunately, or fortunately, as we've done well, freeing it up after 40 minutes. Who needs to warm up? But it wasn't something we wanted to, but we just felt we had to do it.
In your hearts of hearts, did you think you were going to kick off at 3 o'clock? Did you know you were definitely going to play the game, whatever?
I think even at 20 past two, I think it was still out in the open. We wasn't sure what we was going to do. We was just waiting for I think Dave was in with the board members, seeing if they were signed what we wanted to sign. So it was still up in the air, really.
And I guess, Steve, you was at the game. That there was contrast inside and out, because obviously, Andy, you would be inside the dressing room and you wouldn't know necessarily what's going on outside. And Steve, at the same token, you're outside with the fans and you wouldn't know what's going on behind closed doors.
No, it was very strange. Wrexham came out and did their warm-up as normal, and there was nobody in the other half of the pitch apart from a mascot and one of the academy players from Ebbsfleet. And we probably got to 20 past two, and people are asking, well, what's going on? Where are the players? Have we got a game on? And obviously I only knew as much as they did, in the sense that, well, they're not here at the moment and we think they're going to come out and play the game, or come out and kick off. And then Dave Lockwood, the stadium announcer, went out on the middle of the pitch with the microphone and said, absolutely, are going to come out and kick off at 3 o'clock, to big cheers from the home fans. And I think everything that happened before the game only sort of served to enhance the atmosphere during the game. I mean, Andy, when you came out and kicked off and the game got going, did you feel that the crowd were right behind you from the start?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, I was on the bench, but I think it was a bit of both, really. I think in the first 2-3 minutes, I think a couple of the lads won a couple of important challenges. And obviously, I think it both come hand in hand, because the supporters were cheering. It set the players off. The players then put a few good challenges. It set the fans off even more. So I think we both contributed to each other's atmosphere, I think.
Can you give us a bit of an insight into what was going on inside your changing room in the hour before the game? Because it's probably something that you've never encountered before in terms of not warming up.
No, I think I've always warmed up, really. I've never really enjoyed the warm-ups that much, but I've always warmed up. But no, it was quite relaxed, to be honest with you. I was watching, there was a game on the telly, it's Aldershot Files, some of the boys were watching that. I got a few characters in there, so it was just relaxed. We were having a laugh, and it wasn't anything unusual going on in there.
I mean, normally all your focus pre-match is on the opposition and your own preparation, and every player's probably got their own routines and rituals. Was your head a little bit all over the place because you weren't sure what was going on, like in the boardroom or elsewhere in the ground?
Well, I was on the bench anyway, so I know I was sitting on the bench. But for the boys that started, I think it might have had a little bit of an effect to them, to a degree. But I think when you get out onto the pitch anyway, you don't really think about it. It's done. You sign what we wanted to sign, and then obviously as far as we was aware, we was going to get paid. And the boys went out there and they performed really well, 45 minutes.
How hard is that to do, though? How hard is it to turn everything else off that's going on? Because, you know, you've got bills to pay, you've got children to feed, etc. You know, you've got to switch off from that and play the game of football.
I think it's difficult all the way through the week, and it's difficult leading up to it. But I do think as soon as you go on that pitch, you don't think about it. You just want to, the mentality comes in, especially the people we've got in the squad, where we want to win and we want to perform, and that's what we've done all the time under difficult circumstances. But during the week's the hardest part, when you're being told you're getting paid and you're not getting paid, and you know, you've got families to feed and you're relying on money coming in, and then it's not very good.
Is it the longevity now, how long it's gone on for, that's the more annoying part, that the fact it's not been resolved?
Yeah, pretty much. And obviously just broken promises, I think, really. It's just disheartening, really. I think it's disheartening for the players more than anyone, but also for the fans as well, because they want a football club to be proud of, to support, and they don't want to see players not coming out for warm-ups and things like that. They want to see everything going on, everything, respecting each other as well, I think.
When all this has been going on off the field over, well, more than a year now it's been, hasn't it, going on, how have you been able to put in the performances and get the results that you have done? Because the two things seem completely at odds.
I think because we've got good players, to be honest. I think beyond end all is that we do have a very, very good squad of players under difficult circumstances. And if circumstances weren't put in front of us, then I firmly believe we'd be a lot higher up the table.
Is it about the characters as well, the personalities as much as the playing ability that you've got and the number of senior players in there?
Yeah, I think so. I think the senior players obviously help run the dressing room to a certain degree. And then I wouldn't say the younger players do have character. They're always entitled to their opinion in everything we do. But also, I just generally think we are good players.
And every player that I've spoken to doing interviews or talking off the record talk about the togetherness in the squad, the fact that if you do something, you all do it together. And obviously Saturday bore that out. Do you think, because of the various scenarios that you've had to deal with, it's created quite a special bond with this group of people?
Yeah, I think when we won the playoffs as well, I think you could see the spirit when we went down to 10 men before half time and we won eventually against Chelmsford. I think you can see the spirit there, but I think over the last year or so, the way we stuck together, it's definitely gone up a notch.
We talk about your career looking back in a minute, but where do you see your future in football?
I'm looking forward to playing football next season with no off the field stuff, so you can just sit back and enjoy your football and work hard, which will be nice.
Is it at this point where you start to look at what options there might be on the table?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think you'd be silly not to with what's gone on over the last year or so. I think a lot of the lads are out of contract at the end of the season, so they'd be silly not to start looking somewhere else, I think.
So how do you go about that? Have a word with the agent and start to see?
I think if players have an agent, then obviously they say that they'll know the situation that would be going on anyway, so they'll just say, look, see what's out there for me, and then they'll start speaking to clubs.
Andy, one of the things from Saturday that it's a shame, really, that obviously the off-field offence have overtaken it in some ways, is that you scored four goals against a team above you in the table in the playoff places, and also a defensive unit. I think they've only conceded 30 goals all season up to that point. I mean, that's been totally overshadowed by everything else that's gone on.
Yeah, definitely. Like I say, the boys' first half were outstanding. They got on the front foot and they really took the game to Wrexham, and I don't really think Wrexham knew what hit them. I think maybe they might have been in a different mindset because we wasn't warming up, so maybe if anything it's helped us. But yeah, we scored three goals, and to be honest, it could have been five or six, I think. Steve, you'll agree. I think Corey had a chance. I think Westy nearly scored right at the end. So it could have been even more, really. It could have made it more comfortable for ourselves.
And it keeps you in the playoff hunt as well now, doesn't it, going forward?
We're in there. We've got some, I'd say, favourable fixtures. Every game's tough at this level, but we've got some favourable fixtures and to win as well. So I'd say we probably need to win four out of our last five to guarantee it, I'd say.
How much of an achievement would it be to make those playoffs, given everything that's going on?
Yeah, it'd be absolutely massive, I think. Absolutely massive for the players and the supporters to make them playoffs.
And do the players actually have that affection for the fans as well? Because you're getting their back in, obviously, on Saturday, but you've sort of gone through it together almost in a way.
Yeah, definitely, especially the last few months when it's come out. They can see how much we're fighting for it and what we've gone through, and I think that the backing that they give us, you know, we really appreciate.
You're listening to the KM Football Podcast.
Going back to the start of your career after being a youngster at Chelsea, your first senior club was Sittingbourne, your local team. What are your memories of playing down there?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it down there. I used to go and watch Sittingbourne as a kid when they got the new stadium. I think 93, I think. So I'd have been 9 years old, I think. I remember I had some good pre-season fixtures against Tottenham, Arsenal. Been some big clubs down. It's quite a lovely stadium there as well. So I used to go down there and watch them, and then obviously playing in that stadium as well when you're 16, 15, 16, it was fantastic.
Was football always a big part of your life? Did you always grow up wanting to be a professional footballer one day?
I think back in my day, a long time ago, kids just play football. You know, we'd come home from school, we'd go to the park and go and play football. Obviously, you can't really do that nowadays, can you, with everything goes on. But back in the day, it was just like, live like around an area where there's five or six of my mates around, so we just literally come home from school, go and get changed, go and play football for a couple of hours and then come home. It was brilliant.
And Graveton and Northfleet, as they were then, picked you up from Sittingbourne. How did it come about? You were playing well at Sittingbourne, were you scouted or somebody knew of you?
I don't even know how it came about, really. I just, I'd had a year and a half at Sittingbourne and I just thought, I've really got to go for this. So over the summer, I just got myself really, really fit as I could possibly be. I had a good season. I think I scored 18 or 19 goals in one season. And then I think maybe it'd been about June time, I think Andy Ford was manager of Gravesend. And I had a phone call from him asking me to come for pre-season training. So I just said, yeah, might as well. It was like two or three leagues up from Sittingbourne. So I went there, trained a week. And then I think we went down to Bath on a pre-season tour, played a Friday night game and a Saturday afternoon. And I played well, and then Saturday night he pulled me in his room and offered me a deal.
So when you were part-time in the early part of your career, did you have a day job, something you were doing Monday to Friday?
Yeah, I was doing building work for one of my friend's dads at the time for a few years until I went to Lewis.
And how was that environment at Gravesend, stepping up in terms of football into the conference and playing with some good characters there as well?
Yeah, there was some very, very colourful characters, and that was a good atmosphere as well, to be fair. Part-time football, I think it is enjoyable because you do it because you enjoy it. You're not relying on that money to come in. So yeah, it was very enjoyable. Some good characters.
Who was in there? Who stands out?
Justin Skinner. Lee Shearer was a character. And then you obviously had the older ones. You had Steve McKim. You had Jay Saunders. Chris Moore was there. That was a very good group of men, that was.
When you talk about colourful characters, is it that people would, you know, play jokes or the banter that was going around?
Both, really. I mean, Lee Shearer didn't stop. He'd have every single trick up his sleeve. He would, Justin Skinner, walking around naked all the time.
We heard that last week, didn't we?
I was just thinking, Justin's developing a very bad reputation on the podcast, isn't he?
It was very funny, man. Yeah, it's just, you know, because I think where you work all day and you go into a dressing room environment and you look forward to it, it's not so much a job, it's for your enjoyment, really, because obviously people probably didn't have to do it to live. So you just do it because you enjoy it, which makes for a better camp.
Is that quite a contrast to being back at the club now, because you are full-time, this is your job?
Yeah, obviously it's still enjoyable. But this is your job, and with the circumstances at the moment, it doesn't make it as enjoyable as what it should be.
No, you talked about the impact that it has, like Monday to Friday, away from the training ground or games. When you're paid late, how does that impact on you personally?
Yeah, definitely, because obviously you've got kids to feed and you're waiting for that money to hit your account so you can go to the shops, maybe get some food and drink, and you can't do it because there's no money in there. Yeah, it's not very like a dread payday, to be quite honest with you, at the moment. But it's just not very nice at the moment.
As a younger player, to sort of rewind in time, at Gravesend, a younger player into that squad of senior players, what was your place, your kind of role within that? Do you get fully involved in all the banter, or do you have to kind of take a,
I think I'd always try to get involved in the banter, but as a younger player, you've got to know where you stand with them as well. So you can only go too far, I think, before they lose their head.
Did you learn by experience?
Yeah, of course. No, nutmeg Nathan Bunce a couple of times, and he come marching over the training pitch for me. Luckily, there was a couple of people in the middle of it, but I couldn't show any weakness. So I just gave it a little bit back to him as much as I could.
You played the big end. We've heard that, yeah, from a couple of people. I think it happened at Sittingbourne as well, where you liked a nutmeg in training, and then the reaction you got was...
They didn't seem to like it, did they? To be fair, I don't like it now anyway, so... Roles reverse now.
See where they're coming from.
Yeah.
I was going to ask, do the young ones do it on you?
They try. I'll just keep my legs closed.
You played for Stevenage a few years later, but is it true that you could have gone straight from Gravesend to Stevenage?
Yeah. At the time when I was leaving Gravesend, the first time Liam Daish rung me up and said he wouldn't be keeping me, I was due to meet Graham West, who was manager of Stevenage, on a Saturday lunchtime. In London, I got a message at 9 o'clock on the Saturday morning saying that he had left the club and I wouldn't be meeting him. I think Stimmo took over, but they were still interested in signing me with Mark Stimson. But I spoke to the chief executive and he wouldn't tell me the manager. And I was signing for Lewis with Steve King, and Steve wanted an answer by the weekend. So I was saying to Bob Makin, who was chief executive at the time, I said, Bob, can you please tell me your manager, because I'm not prepared to commit to a club where I didn't know who the manager was, and he wouldn't reveal who the manager was. So I ended up signing for Lewis.
And how was it down there?
Yeah, that was good. That was a good dressing room. I had 2 good years there. Steve was good for me at the time. He played good football and he gave me freedom to go and express myself. And I was 22, 23, so... At the time, it was something that I needed, I think, to be able to have a manager and let me go and express myself.
You won Conference South that second season as well, didn't you? What was that like, playing in a title-winning team?
Yeah, that was good as well. I think we had it wrapped up with about 3 games to go as well. That was good. We was good. We was a good team that year. I think we won it by about 9 points in the end from Eastbourne. They were our local rivals, but that was good. And then we... that was a bit similar to here, really, and... We got a call on the Friday saying that the owner had no money left at Lewis, and that the manager would be going and the players would be going as well. So we played the last game of the season knowing that as well. So that was a bit strange.
How important is it as a player to, even if you've had good times at different clubs, just that experience of winning something, to know what it feels like to win a league or to win a cup?
Yeah, it's great because it's such a long season, you graft for 9-10 months, and then to actually win something from that season is just so satisfying. Just the feeling of it as you lift that trophy is just that. That's what it's all worth it.
Yeah. So was it Graham Westley then got his job back, didn't he, at Stevenage, and he brought you there after Lewis?
Yeah. So Lewis, we done that season. Then obviously that happened on the Friday, and then somebody else took over the club, and I can't remember who did. He tried to keep me, but Steve King brought me to the club and he had left, and I just felt I owed it to him. I didn't really want to stay there. All the lads were leaving. And then I had a text message from Graham again saying, can you come and meet me? And I said, yeah, okay. I didn't know what for. And then he said, look, I'm the Stevenage manager again. Would you like to come? I said, yeah. And then I sorted a deal out with him and then signed there.
What's he like to work for?
As a man, I really like him, actually. I think he likes me as well. Very intriguing character, very very clever, extremely clever. You do well to outwit him in a conversation. But it was just, mentally, it was the trainings, it was very draining. Even when you get home at 7, 8 o'clock at night from training all day, you then get text messages from him. Arsenal stuff, so you can never really switch off from it. But again, I had 2 years under him, and I learnt different things from him. Mentally from him, I learnt to be stronger. And I had 2 successful years there as well, so it worked. For the group of players that we had there, they brought into what he was trying to do, and it worked.
You always came across as quite an intense person. Is that
Yeah, very intense, right, yeah. Yeah, very intense. He'd... you have lots of meetings. Training wouldn't be as intense because it was a lot longer, so it was more grueling. Done a lot of weights and a lot of meetings. But like I say, I think every manager's different and they all have different ideas. His ideas were a lot different to other managers, but then he had success.
Are you someone who likes, you talk about having a team meeting, do you like being given a lot of information about, say, the player that you're up against or the way that the opposition are going to play and getting your head right?
I'd rather not, to be honest. I think there's stuff you need to know about the opposition as such, but I think when you get over that white line, so I think it's about you and what your teammates do to affect the game.
It was a very successful time, wasn't it, the 2 years you had at Stevenage? You got to Wembley twice, you won one final, you scored in another one, and you won the conference as well. So do you look back on that as a real happy time in your career, or good time?
It was a happy time because we had a good, like I say, we had a good group of men. And I think when you are successful, it's always happy. When you're winning games on a Saturday and you're going home and you're happy, it makes a difference to your life, full stop, I think. But we, like I say, I had the trophy final we won, and we nearly got to the playoff final as well. I think it was 3-1 up in the first leg against Cambridge, and they won, I can't remember where they won, 2 or 3-0, I think. We blew it a little bit, and then we bounced back and won the playoff final. And I think that hurt from the playoff semi-final helped spur us on to actually win the league.
What was the Wembley experience like to play there, to do it a couple of times and to score a goal there?
Yeah, it was good, yeah. The first one was better because we won. It's not a nice place to go to and lose. The second one I scored against Barrow, we went 1-0 up, and then they equalised, then we got a man sent off, and then they got a man sent off, but in the same challenge, our player fractured his cheekbone and couldn't carry on, so we was down to 9 men. I think it's just one of them games where everything goes against you. But even, I mean, it wasn't that enjoyable, but scoring there was, for me personally.
It's a real contrast to have that feeling of winning, walking up the steps and getting the trophy, and then a year later to be losing and watching somebody else do it. And
yeah.
Quite painful.
Yeah, it was painful, but I think because we'd done it the year before and we'd won the league that year already, I think it was bearable, I'd say.
So do you think, you talked about the way that Westley was, do you think the ends kind of justified his means, even though it was a little bit unorthodox?
I think for that group that bought into it, it definitely did. We bought into what he wanted to do, and we'd done everything he asked us to do, and we got success from it. So for that, I'd say it did. Obviously, I don't think it's worked at every single club that he's done, but you can't knock him for his achievements.
A few of the managers that you played for were really big characters, aren't they, or big personalities. Who had the biggest influence on your career, do you think?
I think Steve King gave me the freedom to actually go and play how I wanted to actually play the game. John Rowles was my Sittingbourne under-16s manager, who got the job as caretaker manager for the first team, and he threw me straight in, so I would always be grateful for him for that as well. Graham, I think I learned different things, how to be mentally stronger in myself and believe in myself even more. And then I think other managers, you just pick up little things really. Mick McCarthy, I think he was very, very, very honest. Richard Money was a very good coach, and he brought the best out of me. He knew how to play me in the right area, which was important, and that helped me get my move. Yeah, I think every manager has helped me in my career in different ways.
Interesting that you mentioned Richard Money. We had Andy Pugh on the podcast a few weeks back, and he said the same thing. He was probably the best coach that he worked for. Was it just his attention to detail or the way that he was with the players?
I think that when he was at Luton, I think he'd come from Newcastle Academy. So when you're in an academy, you're coaching all the time. And his sessions were very good. But for me personally, he brought the best out of me because he knew how to coach me, how to let me go and play, and where to put me on the pitch and things like that. But as a coach, I've played under some good coaches. Darryl's a good, very, very good coach when he was here at Ebbsfleet. Mick McCarthy had a very good coach with him called Terry Connor, and I think he's with him with Ireland now. He was very, very good. Yeah, I think I've definitely had some very good coaches. Richard was very good as well.
Mm. And in terms of giving you the freedom to play or the technical side of your game, sort of to really take it back to basics, how's your role as a midfield player changed over the years in terms of adding to your game and becoming the player that you are now?
For me personally, I think I was a wide player, but I didn't have blistering pace. I was just normal, really. And as you go up the levels, the pace of the game changes. And I went up to Ipswich, I was playing wide at Luton, I was tucked in, I was scoring goals and setting goals up and playing very well. And then I went to Ipswich and I quickly realised I'm not really quick enough to play out wide, because some of the pace of some of them are quite frightening. So I quickly, Paul George said, oh, I'm going to play you in the middle, and I agreed. And then it just went from there, really. I had to adapt my game.
That was a really big move for you, wasn't it, going from the Conference up to Ipswich in the Championship. How did it come about? Because you weren't with Luton for very long at all. You joined them in the summer, and by January, you were off.
Yeah, I left Stevenage after we won the league and then went to Luton. And then I probably had one of my best spells playing football. I was really good for 5-6 months. And then I think I got a call saying Ipswich were interested. Would you want to go? And I said, yeah. And then my agent spoke to some people, because I had a release clause in my contract at Luton. My agent spoke to some people, and then it just went from there, really.
So Paul Jewell phones you up and you have a chat? And
My agent said, you're going to get a phone call from Paul Jewell soon. So I said, OK, no problem. So I'm just sitting there by the phone, and he rings me up. I think he was in a bit of a bad area as well, but he's very scouse. Very difficult to understand, and I couldn't really understand him too well, and I just said, yeah, I'd love to play for you. and then he said, yeah, no problem, I'll see you soon. And then I think that was down about Wednesday, Thursday, and then I was up there on the Friday and signed on the Monday, I think, once they'd agreed all the fees and that.
From what you could work out, I mean, what was he saying to you in terms of come and play for me? Did they talk about how well they've been watching you for the last few weeks or months and what bits of your game they can work on? Or
I couldn't understand him. No, he did tell me, obviously, when I went down there to sign, I had more of a conversation. He said, look, as a club, I think they'd spent a lot of money on Premiership players, bringing them down. Maybe they were there for the wrong reasons. And he said, we're going to go with a different type of transfers and try and look for some younger, hungrier players, and we've watched you for a couple of months and we want to give you a go.
Were you surprised how quickly the move came about? Because Steve said you'd only been at Luton for a short period of time.
No, I wasn't actually, because I knew I was playing very well at the time. I was probably the best player in the league at the time, and there was always whispers and rumours of different clubs interested. And so at the time, I knew something was going to happen, but I wasn't quite sure where I was going to go.
What was it like going into Ipswich as a club? As you say, great tradition, big club and everything. Was it quite, surreal in a way?
The Monday, I think I went down on the Friday and they had the weekend off because it was international, I think it might be international, or something happened there. I didn't have a game at the weekend. So I was there all day Friday and no one was really at the training ground. They were showing me around and stuff, showing me all the history of the club with Alf Ramsey and Sir Bobby Robson, and I think they won the European UEFA Cup, and history was fantastic where it was. I was just looking forward to it, to be honest. And then on the Monday morning, all the papers were signed, and then I could train with them.
Do you have to sort of pinch yourself when you see that kind of thing, that you're going to that kind of club?
I did look around the dressing room on the Monday thinking, oh, this could be a bit standard, could be a bit frightening. I didn't really know what to expect, really. And then I went out onto the field, and to be fair, the passes that you received straight away were a lot harder. You was doing passing drills and you couldn't muck up, basically. It was very frowned upon, whereas if you did muck up in the Conference teams, then it's just like, okay, we're getting another ball here. They didn't have any other balls laying around, because they're not expected you to touch to go. But it was definitely an eye-opener on that first morning.
What were the players that you were competing, or who were the players you were competing alongside in that sort of squad to try and get a place in the team?
Yeah, when I first signed, there was David Norris, Grant Leadbear and Jimmy Bullard were playing. And then I think there was me and Colin Healy were the other centre midfielders, weighing if they were injured. But to be fair, them three were scoring goals and they went on a very good run, Ipswich did, towards the end of the season, because I think they were down by the relegations just before I come in. So they were three very good players I was trying to dislodge out of that team.
Did you manage to do it? Did you get in?
I played a couple of games. I think Jimmy, I made my full debut against Hull, and Jimmy was on loan from there, so I had to play in that. And then I was in and out a little bit towards the end of the season, really, which was probably the standard. Probably, I think it's just one of them where you need to play a couple of games and come out and then learn from things you haven't done. And it was because it was such a big jump. And then in the summer, I got myself quite fit in the summer. And then I kept seeing all these centre midfielders arrive, and I was thinking, oh, I haven't really got a chance here. Keith Andrews come from Premier League team, Lee Bowyer joined, Jimmy joined permanently, Grant was still there, Mark Kennedy could play in the middle as well. So I was thinking,
was that ever demoralising to see people coming in almost jumping the queue,
especially the level of them? Obviously you sit there and you think them players are coming in, you think, I haven't got a chance here. And I didn't play more than 45 minutes that pre-season in a game. And then I think the start of September, I think we played Luton in a friendly. Luton reserves, I think, in a friendly on like a Tuesday, Wednesday. And I was horrendous. And I thought, oh, what's happened here? Like, I'm playing against my old team with their reserves and I've just absolutely had one. So I went to see Paul John. I said, look, I need to play games. He said, OK, look, go and sort yourself a move out and then we'll look at it. And then Steve Evans tried to sign me on loan from Crawley, and I just said, yeah, I just want to go and play games. So I ended up going there for 3 months.
Steve Evans, I mean, again, looking at him from the outside, he's a real big personality. Everyone's probably got an opinion of him. So going and playing for him, how did you find him?
I found him a very nice man, actually, surprisingly. Off the pitch, he's a lovely man, I think. Obviously, on the pitch, his will to win takes over, and like some people do, that, you know, probably doesn't. A bit hot-headed and shouts a lot, but off the pitch, if I'm sitting here, or there's a few times I just sat him in his office for half hour because I think he wanted to sign me after the loan was up. We just have a conversation about life, and he was actually a really, really nice man. I'll always have time for Steve because he did nothing wrong to me, and he was a nice man, and obviously a bit eccentric, but. I was quite lucky at the time. I think we won 13 and drew 2 out of 15 games. So I did hear a few stories, though, when they did lose, and I was in at 7 o'clock in the morning and stuff. But no, I've no complaints about Steve. He was good for me as well.
Across your career, after games or at half-time, if you hadn't played well or something had gone wrong, which of those managers would kind of go for the old hairdryer? You know, were there any that
Steve was going for the hairdryer at half-time, no matter what the score was, I think. He used to have a towel next to him and going crazy. So I think it was just his way of making sure, if we were winning, making sure we don't come off it, and if we was losing, I think it was just his way of, right, get out there and make sure you don't lose the game.
Does that sort of stuff work on players? If you hear it all the time, I suppose you could switch off, but if someone's really, yeah, really going for you,
I think it just depends on the character. Again, that Crawley team that I went to just won the league, and they were strong characters, so they're just, yeah, he's shouting again. It's like, come on, you'd more G yourself up a little bit. Yeah, I think it just depends on the mentality of the players in there.
What's Gary like now at Ebbsfleet?
No, Gary's fine. He's not really a shouter. I mean, I don't think I've heard him shout yet, but like I say, the boys are, I think all the time you put in a shift and you graft for their manager nowadays, I don't think they'll come and shout.
No, he seems to like his own personal space. You see him before a game and he'll be sat in the dugout or just kind of collecting his thoughts and new players are out there stood on the pitch or doing your warm-up. He's not one to be really sort of
He's not in your face. He will do a team talk and then say a few bits to a few people and then that's it, really.
I suppose you've dealt more on the training pitch with Ian Hendon. He's the more hands-on of the two, isn't he?
Yeah, Hendo does all the coaching. And obviously, the gaffer will do the stuff on the Saturday and he'll tell us a few bits and bobs and cheer us up a little bit, and then obviously we'll go out there.
We spoke about how you got the move to Ipswich in the first place. When it came for the time for them to release you, was it something you could see coming? How did they let you go?
Mick had taken over in October time, I think, from Paul Jewell. And I'd played regularly since I'd gone back off my loan to Crawley. Played regularly there. But I always had a feeling there was four or five of us out of contract, and you always, from Christmas onwards, I think you always have a gut feeling that manager wants to bring his own players in, as anyone would do, really. So there was me, Lee Martin, I think, Chopra. I think J. Emmanuel Thomas left that summer as well, and there's a couple of others that left them. You kind of know that you're going to be leaving, really. So you just try and enjoy the last few months that you got there, really.
And does it end with a meeting with you and the manager in the office and
it normally happens before the last game of the season. I kind of wanted to leave as well, because I've always been a player who wants to play, and for me there's no point in you train all week to play that game on a Saturday. So for me, I always wanted to play on a Saturday, so I knew I had to move on to play every game. So I made it easy for him in the meeting with him. I think it was on a Thursday before the last game of the season. It's quite a hard job for a manager to release players, but I said, look, it's not a problem. You know, I think it's best I come and play football at another club and look to play every single week. And he was fine, and I was fine. And we shook hands and we moved on. And then boom, we had Burnley away, I think we had on the Saturday. And my firstborn baby was due, Sienna was due on that Saturday. And he said, look, don't worry about coming in, just come in tomorrow, say goodbyes, and then have the weekend off. And my missus went into labour on the Saturday morning at 4 o'clock in the morning, so I was quite lucky.
And you talked about always wanting to play games, not be sitting around and not involved. Are there other people that you've played with who were different to that, who would quite happily stay at the higher level even if it meant they weren't involved and weren't playing?
Not so much. Not that I noticed. There might have been a couple at Ipswich. I think what happens is sometimes you're not playing, but then there's a bit of a standoff with the club where a player might be waiting for a payoff, and the club might not want to have to give him a payoff, and then they haggle for a few months and you're like, are you still here? Oh yeah, still here, waiting for my payoff. That happens a bit. I think ultimately most professionals want to play. It's just how much patience you probably got to wait around.
Jimmy Bullard, give us, you know, your favourite Jimmy memories.
Jimmy, probably running around naked after the chef Sunila at Ipswich in the training ground. She was running off and he was running after her. That was quite funny. But no, Jimmy was definitely a character. He had a few characters in that team as well. Jason Scotland was a very funny man. He's going down. You couldn't walk anywhere without hearing this big, I think he's from Trinidad, I think, big Caribbean accent bellowing through the corridors. He was a very funny man as well.
You get to know Jimmy sort of well, like off the pitch, getting to know him as a person and talk football.
Yeah, Jimmy used to travel in from Surrey. He used to travel in, I think. He used to have a driver because I think his knee was too big. But yeah, he used to stay at my flat. I had a flat in Ipswich. He used to stay a few times. Jimmy's actually he's a really nice bloke when you get him one-on-one, and I think you get him in a group and, you know, he likes the attention, I think, but he's a top man, Jim.
And you talked about Mick McCarthy earlier, and he was just a very honest manager. He'd tell you if you played well or if you hadn't played well. Did you like that honesty, and do you think all players want a manager to be straight up with them?
I think that's all you can ask from a manager, really. I think that's part of being a man management. Part of man management, really, and some people lack it, and I think that's maybe where managers don't do as well, really, because as a player, that's all you want is honesty. You know, you don't want to be lied to. Just a bit of honesty, and and that's what he used to do.
When you left Ipswich, was Crawley the obvious place to go after that?
I had about four or five clubs interested, but I just, Siena was just born and we didn't really want to move at the time. Steve Evans was at Rotherham at the time and he was calling me up every few hours to come up there and sign for him, but we just had a baby and we didn't really want to move anywhere, so there was a couple of clubs interested and I just said, look, I've been there before, I know a lot of the lads, and it just kind of made a bit of sense for me to go back there.
So did you end up taking a pay cut in the sense that you could have gone somewhere else for and got more money?
Yeah, definitely.
Just for the family lifestyle?
Yeah, I could have got quite a bit more money somewhere else, but obviously we didn't want to move. So I just said, look, okay, well, we'll just concentrate on these two or three clubs that are interested around here, and then we just went for that.
And how do you get to the final sort of, you know, crossing the line? If you've got two clubs to choose between at the end, and what's that like as a player to be put in that situation, thinking, where do I go?
Well, I suppose it's better than having none. I think you just got to weigh everything up. I think you got to look at the club, look at the area, how long it takes to get in, how well they'll do next year. And obviously, sometimes you're wrong, sometimes you get it right. For me, that was quite an enjoyable season as well. I think we finished mid-table, but we done well. We was always in with a shout of getting in with the playoffs.
They say you should never go back, but you seem to keep going back to wherever you've been before. And after Crawley, it was Luton Town, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think that at the end of that season, John Gregory was the manager at Crawley. And then he was offering out contracts to the boys, and it was a lot less than what they were on. So you kind of got the feeling that the owner that was living in Thailand at the time, he lost interest and he didn't really want to do it anymore, and the budget would be down and they'd be really struggling next year. And I just said to my agent that I'm not sure how well this team's going to do next year. I don't really want to be in a team that's relegated. He said, OK, I'll see if there's anything out there for you. And then Luton were interested and put a bid in. I think my release clause was $100,000, I think. So, they bid a couple of times and John Gregory said, look, I don't want you to go anywhere. I'm going to build my team around you. I was like, okay, that's fine. Obviously, until the release clause is met, I can't go anywhere. And I got on well with John as well. So I didn't mind that. And then the chief executive at Crawley rung me up and said, they've met your release clause, you can go and meet Luton. And then I went to meet John Steele. I was at the Hilton Hotel in Dartford, and he didn't turn up for that meeting. He said he had to take someone to the airport, I think. And then I said to my agent, I'm not sure that's right. I said, I'm not sure this is for me. He said, well, he said, you know, that's what's there. He said, obviously, I'll speak to him, and then I met him again. And although the relationship didn't really feel right, it's just where I had such a good time at the Luton first time, I wanted to go back there. In hindsight, it's probably a mistake, but at the time, I just wanted to go back and play for Luton.
Do you think you as a player just weren't quite a fit with what John wanted to do?
I don't think John wanted to sign me at the time, because, like I say, if I was a manager of a football team, I wanted to sign a player, I probably wouldn't miss that meeting, and I should have fought a bit harder after that happened. And the fact that the meeting second time was probably, he probably didn't really talk to me about what I'm going to do. It was all about the youngsters that were there. So maybe I should have thought about it a little bit more logical and said, I don't think this is quite for me, really.
I think just because of the emotional connection that you had with Luton, you really wanted it to work out, and so you tried to see past all that other stuff.
Yeah, definitely, and you know, I got on quite well with a couple of board directors there that I knew as well, and I know they really wanted to happen. So I think it was more them pushing for that deal to happen as opposed to John wanting it to happen. In hindsight, it might have been John not wanting it to happen. Maybe he wanted to push me away from joining the football club at the time, I'm not sure.
And then when you left there, you obviously would have had options, but you weren't worried about dropping back into non-league. It was a case of finding just the right club, somewhere that you were going to play and that you were going to be a good fit, and that's happened throughout your career, isn't it?
Where
you've moved up divisions, but also you've not been afraid to drop from League One to League Two, etc.
Yeah, definitely. I think obviously, especially when I dropped down for Luton, it was a big club in League Two, and then I knew towards the end of that season I wouldn't be finishing the second year of my contract there, and I knew I'd be leaving pretty much. It was just when and to where. And I said to my agent, look, see what's out there. And then he said there's a few League Two clubs that have come in, but didn't really tickle my fancy at the time, and a couple were away and a couple were scraping relegation. I said that I'd rather be in a team that's winning every week and I'm playing. So I think I was watching on telly, I think Forest Green and Eastleigh were both in the playoff semi-finals and I think they both lost. And I said, look, I'll speak to Eastleigh because I knew that was like the closest club towards me down south. And then they were interested. And then it was just about sorting out my contract with Luton and discussing with them.
One thing that you've not done very often in your career is move clubs mid-season. Obviously, the Ipswich move was in the January window, but when you moved from Eastleigh back to Ebbsfleet, that was in the November. So what happened there?
That was the second season. So we had Chris Todd for four games and then Ronnie Moore come in. And then I think with Ronnie, we was based in training around when he was coming from up north because he lived Hartlepool way, I think.
Right.
So some days it'd be 2 o'clock and I was getting home at like 7, 8 o'clock and 6, 7 o'clock or whatever. And I just turned around to my wife one day and I just said, this isn't really worth it anymore. I don't really want to do this anymore. And I went and saw Mark Jewell, the chief executive, who's a nice bloke, and I got on well with him. I said, Jewell, I can't keep doing this. And then he was fine. He said, look, I'll speak to Stuart Donald. And then Stu rang me up in the evening. He said, look, is there anything we can do? I said, look, Stu, I just want to move closer to home now. I said, like, I'm missing out on a few things and I don't want to do it anymore. And he was fine, to be fair. We had the game against Maidstone on a Tuesday night and he said, look, play the Tuesday and the FA Cup game the Sunday. And then we'll sort it out on the Monday and you can go. And then Martin Allen, Ronnie Moore got sacked on the Wednesday and Martin Allen was appointed Thursday afternoon. So I've sort of sat in there for 45 minutes in his office at 8:30 after getting up about 5 o'clock in the morning on Friday. And he's sitting there just talking and I can't even remember what he was saying, but I just knew from then I didn't really, he wasn't going to change my mind. And with me, when Martin was appointed, he had a chance to sign me when he was at Gillingham, when I was leaving Ipswich, and he didn't want to sign me then. And then, but that kind of stuck in my head as well, and I learned from when John when I went back to Luton. So at that time I was thinking, this isn't for me. So I said to him, I still want to go. He said, no, you're not going anywhere. And then we went up to the training pitch. We had to walk up. It was just over the road from the Eastleigh ground. You had to walk up. And then he got him in the circle. He went, everyone warm up. He said, Jury, come here. So I come there and go down there, bugger off. Go down there, I don't want you out here. We'll sort you out Monday. I said, what do you mean? He said, we don't want you here at this football club. I said, no problem. So I go and speak to Stuart Donald. And Stuart just gone out to Germany that morning. So I got down to change room, rang him up. I said, Stuart, this is what's happening. He said, no problem. We'll sort out your release in the next hour or so. So I left the football club within an hour of Martin Allen doing that. And then, because I had agreed to play the game on the Sunday for Stu, and Martin said no. And then that was agreed. And then I spoke to Mac. I said, look, Mac, I've just left. I'm going to come back to a club closer to home. He said, would you be interested? He said, yeah. He said, we're not in today, but I'll come meet you. Him and Peter Varney. And then we sorted out a deal within half hour. And then I played on the Saturday.
Do you think going back to play for someone who you played with earlier in your career, how did you find it going into that Ebbsfleet squad and what they were doing trying to get out of Conference South?
Yeah, I've always watched Kent football to see how the clubs have been doing, even though I've been playing in different counties. But I did notice they were struggling a little bit towards the end of towards the start of the season. I think September-ish time, maybe. They'd lost a few games. And they were just bouncing back. And they were, when I joined, I think they were fourth or fifth at the start of that season. But there was always that mentality where we will go up this year. I'd like to think I added to it as well. And then obviously we did go up.
Belief that we are going to do this, you really needed that in the playoff final particularly, didn't you?
Yeah, I know, yeah. I think we had it all the way through, really. I think we were, Maiden had done so well to keep winning. And I think even then, I think they won it by 2 points in the end. I still don't know how they kept on winning. We used to win every single week and we used to come in and think, surely they've lost today. And then I think they beat Chelmsford on a Tuesday night or Monday night, 1-0 at Chelmsford, and Chelmsford battered them apparently. There's just little things like that, thinking maybe they're not gonna blow it, because I genuinely thought they would blow up a little bit and then drop more points, and then obviously they didn't, so I did it the hard way.
Yeah, and what about that final? What were your memories of that day?
I remember Cookie getting sent off, and I remember Cookie wasn't playing very well anyway, so I said, well, I'll come in half time. I said, well, nothing's going to change anyway. Cookie won't mind me saying that either, because he's a good lad. And then second half, I think they scored. I think Bag scored, didn't they? Bag scored with his hammer foot. And then I just remember the last 15, 20 minutes. It was down to 10 men and we was trying different things. And suddenly it just clicked. And then Dave scored with a header from across. And then Dero lobbed the ball over to me and I crossed it for Daz. And it just went in, and he just knew from then onwards that Chelmsford, they looked very flat, they looked a bit broken the last 5-10 minutes.
I'll never experience that, because as much as I'd like to be a footballer, I'm nowhere near good enough. Describe that feeling when you turn a game around sort of in adversity, and particularly one when it means you get promoted, the feeling when the goals go in and the whistle goes at the end.
Yeah, when the goals went in, it was just like, come on, we can do this. But when the final whistle went, because we was expected to go up, It was kind of, oh, thank goodness for that. It was more relief that we'd actually done it. That was my feeling straight after the final whistle. Thank God.
Was it very different last season, because you were no longer, the big fish in the league? You were going up into the National League and probably surprised a lot of people by getting in the playoffs.
Yeah, but even then we signed some good players, and we had a good squad of players compared to other players. We always had a half an idea we were getting the playoffs. I think when we got in there, we did have to go on a good run at the end of the season, but that happened twice in 2 years. I think we had a big squad towards the start of the season, and then we levelled it out. We had a smaller squad both seasons from January onwards. It brought us closer together, and then it told in our performances.
Yeah, and even this season you had a bigger group at the start of the season, didn't you? It's been reduced down for different reasons. Sometimes that does bring you closer together and just make it easier when you've only got 15, 16 players.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, same thing's happened 3 years in a row, I think. But yeah, hopefully we can make the playoffs again. And although off the field problems don't help, if we can get in the playoffs this year, it'd be a great achievement as well.
When you've done some of the things that you have in your career, played in the Championship and scored at Wembley and things like that, what is it that gets you motivated now to go out on a Saturday or at the training ground and really get you fired up and want to keep working hard?
Probably my family, to be honest. I'm providing a living to my wife, who helps in everything that I do. She makes my life as easy as possible, and she works so hard and dedicates her life towards making our children's life a lot better. And I've got two young girls as well that are my motivation to keep on playing at the moment.
Different sort of experience then to the start of your career, where it's just you're going out there to enjoy your football, and becoming a father, a husband, etc. You've got more going on in your life, haven't you? And
I think it's just part of growing up as life evolves around you. Carefree when you're in your teens and starting out in your 20s and you're just going, you can do what you want, and then as soon as you get a family, you know, you've got people providing, you've got this little baby laying in your arms, and you got to look after it, you've got to adapt and provide for it.
And then you turn up at games and you release the inner child when you meet up with Danny Kedwell and the others.
Yeah, and then we get into a change room and then we get back to the teens again, I suppose. yeah, we have a laugh, and that's something you look forward to when you get in the change room. And we're such a close, at the moment we're such a close knit squad, and you know, the banter's there, and no one takes each other too seriously until we get onto the pitch and you say something, and they take it, and then we take it on board, and then we move on. Nothing's ever, oh, but you said this to me on Saturday, so we just forget about it, and then we just carry on.
I think because of some of the experiences that you've had as a squad, these are people that you'll stay friends with, you know, through life. Or because we've had other people on the podcast and they said actually football can be quite it's quite ruthless. You finish your career and then you don't sort of maintain a lot of friendships. What's it like for you? You know, have you kind of kept in touch with a lot of people?
Yeah, I've kept in contact with quite a lot of people. I think it's a lot easier at the moment, I think, with social media, and you might put something on Twitter or something and someone likes it and say, oh, get a message, hello mate, hey Dan, yeah, you're good. But yeah, there's still a lot of people I still speak to from other clubs that I've played. I used to travel in with Lee Martin from where we used to live into Ipswich most days and stay over in the same hotel and stuff, so we still speak to him, and a few of the Eastleigh lads. I speak to the Eastleigh manager quite a bit. He was a good friend. So yeah, there's definitely people you speak to, and then obviously not everyone, but definitely quite a few people I still speak to.
You're listening to the KM Football Podcast.
What's the best goal you've ever scored?
The best goal is probably the one at the Valley. I think we was 2-1 down playing Charlton in the FA Cup, and I scored probably about 15 minutes to go, I think, to make it 2-2. I think Claude Napke used to play on the right, and I was playing centre midfield then, and then he had a couple of bad touches cutting in, and the ball just rolled nicely to me, and I just curled it from about 25-30 yards into the top corner.
Who is the best player that you've played with?
I'm going to say someone who you probably may not recognise, called Georgie Kingsley.
Man City, Georgia.
Yeah. Derby. I was on trial at Derby for a week, and then I trained there for a week with them, and he was a bit of an outcast at the time, him, Ravinelli and a couple of others. And then I played the game on a Thursday, I think it might have been Thursday or Friday, against Nottingham Forest, just at the training ground. But I mean, his touch and the way he just jinked past people, and I remember watching him on the telly as well in the Premier League when he played for Man City. He just used to score solo goals, and
he was only tiny, wasn't he?
His touch was fantastic. You fire the ball into him and they're just stone dead. Yeah, he was unbelievable.
What about your favourite ground you've played at?
I would say the more old-fashioned grounds are with better atmosphere, and I liked Elland Road. That was good. I scored there. Elland Road, Portsmouth is always good. And Nottingham Forest was good as well. I'd say the older grounds.
Mm. Couple about your teammates now at Ebbsfleet. If you run Who Wants to Be a Millionaire and you had to phone a friend to help you with a question, who'd be your go-to?
Oh, goodness. I'd probably like to say none of them, really. probably Dave Winfield, to be honest.
What about who would you least like to be stuck in a lift with?
Probably Rancy, because we'd both be winding each other up to the point of no return, I think.
Which of your teammates do you think is really going to go on to big things in the game?
Probably. I would say Ashmore. I think Ashmore should be playing in the Championship. I think when I was playing in the Championship, especially training then, the keepers that I played with there, he's better than them.
That high?
Yeah. Really? Yeah. I mean, some of the saves he makes is just out of this world. I've not seen keepers make some of the saves that he's made in his career.
What about his mentality as well, some of the things he's had to deal with personally?
Yeah, but I think that's not good. But I think if he played at a higher level, I don't think he'd encounter that kind of stuff, because they have more stewards, more policing, they're more hot on it. Obviously, it happens, but not to the certain degree where he's
so
got an issue.
In non-league, you're a bit more exposed.
Yeah, you're more exposed. There's less stewards there, so fans think they can do what they want, really. But yeah, definitely, I'd say Ashmore should definitely be playing higher. Mm.
There's been a bit of symmetry in your career. We talked about how you've come Gravesend and then sort of full circle back to Ebbsfleet, a couple of spells at Luton and Crawley as well. So we're going to see you in a Sitting Bourne shirt before you finish playing?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe when I'm about 40, 41. I'll still keep an eye out for their results. I think they've moved stadiums again. They play at Woodstock. It would be nice if a very rich owner come in and bought Sitting Bourne and put them back into the main stadium at Central Park. But yeah, hope that would be nice. That would be ideal.
You talk about still playing at 40 or 41. I mean, what are you thinking coaching wise now? Is that where you'd like to stay in the game that way, or do you see yourself as a manager further down the line one day?
I think I'd like to play. I definitely wouldn't want the season to end after everything we've been, my career to end off on the season like this, where we've been through all the stuff and it's not been as enjoyable. So I'll definitely play for another 2-3 years, I think. Where that'll be, I'm not sure yet, but I think with coaching and management, I think that's something that you have to learn what you want to do as you get into it. So I think you start as a coach. Obviously, some people do start as a manager, but I think it's easier to start as a coach and you can learn from the manager and you can see what they do and learn different things and see if it's actually for you. So that's something that I do want to stay in football after the next few years, definitely.
You said earlier you think 4 wins out of 5 might do it for the playoff places. How do the squad go for this next 5 weeks with everything that's going on off the pitch? I know we spoke about it at the top of the podcast, but how will the squad come together and just give it everything?
I think we're taking it every minute at a time at the moment. I think literally it is day by day at the moment. Obviously, if we do get paid, then we go to Gateshead and we go full of confidence, and they're having their own problems as well, which hopefully they get sorted out as well. And we just take it a game at a time, really. We've got some favourable fixtures as such, in that they're not the top teams in the league, but every game is extremely tough in this league.
You mentioned Gateshead there as well. They've got their financial problems. Is it worrying and is it happening more frequently, would you say, now that clubs are experiencing these off-the-field issues?
I think they've always been around. I think when I was younger, there was Weymouth, Rushden, Diamonds. They all have problems. But what I think is unfair is when people have contracts and people rely on their money and they've been signed, I believe there should be something in there. Something needs to change. Maybe that the club has to have a whole year's budget money in their account before they start the season, so people know what's there. But definitely something needs to change.
We thank you, Andy, for coming in and talking so openly about the issues at Ebbsfleet in the last week with us today. But you're not obviously the spokesperson for that squad at all, or in any way, shape or form are we suggesting you are. But is there a way forward for Ebbsfleet from here? I mean, obviously they've got to pay the players, but do you feel almost that the players have been put in a really impossible situation?
Yeah, it's no win situation at the moment where we are, but I feel like we said earlier, with the fans and the squad that we've got, we're just grafting, trying to get for ourselves more than anything to get ourselves into the playoffs.
Andy, we thank you once again for your honesty and being so open with us and coming in to see us on the podcast. Really enjoyed the last down a trip down memory lane, and wish all the best in hopefully the playoffs for Ebbsfleet, but certainly for the rest of the season and going forward.
Long trip down memory lane. No problem. Pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the KM Football Podcast. Click subscribe at Audio Boom and iTunes and keep up to date with the latest stories at kentonline.co.uk.